Hey, everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
And welcome to the Invested Podcast, y'all. We're excited to be here, giving you a little Southern flavor there.
Nice. Y'all. Thanks, yeah. Y'all. We have been dealing with, it feels like the world does not want us to be able to record this today. So I'm excited that we're doing it. And I'm pretty sure that we're probably going to end up saying really useful things.
Yeah.
Because that's what tends to happen. Or it could be totally a waste of time. Who knows?
We thought, since we pretty well wrapped up the Berkshire meeting.
Indeed.
We'd move on to a subject that is on everybody's mind out here. Is not everybody's, but the impact of AI with the release of artificial intelligence, with the release of ChatGPT from a partnership between OpenAI and Microsoft, and the very recent release of Bard from Google, have stirred things up quite a bit. And when ChatGPT was released at the end of last year, it caused the CEO of Google to say, we are on red alert. This is a potentially damaging competition, and we're now on red alert, and we are going to do everything we can to catch up. And I think it's the fact that Microsoft released this thing to try to drive people over to Bing, their search engine, drove Google to release Bard prematurely. And the result is fascinating, what we've got out here right now.
Yeah, I mean, we're not obsessed with this or anything, although it probably comes off that way because we keep on doing podcasts about it. But Bard just came out, and I've been working on getting some actual info, which just still, again, hasn't happened yet. It was supposed to happen today. Isn't. We'll get it. We'll have somebody on who knows what the heck he's talking about better than us. And we'll find out. So it's been a little bit like top of mind. And so we were just chatting about it. And yeah, this Bard one just came out, but it has the same problems, which is that it's not reliable. So as far as investing work, I mean, I don't think it's that useful. What do you think?
No, I think that it's fascinating. And really, once you start playing with it, it's just not very useful at all.
Yeah.
It does this thing where it just makes stuff up. They call it hallucination, but I mean, you can go to places in the world where if you're a traveler and you have wealth and you're in a third world country, it's really interesting a lot of times where you'll ask somebody a question of how to get somewhere and they will give you an answer because they, even if they have no idea whatsoever where or how to go, where you want to go.
Yes.
They're going to give you an answer because they feel like they must in order to kind of keep their self-image or something.
I don't know if it involves being wealthy or not. I think it's just...
It could be anybody.
That was funny.
A traveler. European traveler. So, but I wouldn't cause that. I wouldn't call that a hallucination. I would call that such a strong desire to be helpful,
yeah,
and to answer the question that it compels a person to come up with an answer, whatever, and to make it look real. I mean, to make it just sound like you absolutely know what you're talking about. You just feel so compelled to be of service. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that may be what's going on with these AI guys, is that they have built something that feels compelled. And I say feels, right? Like it's a computer,
right.
But I don't know.
Yeah. But it's because it talks. I mean, it gives that feeling. It's the personification through natural language that I think is grabbing all of us, because otherwise I cannot figure out why this is even all that interesting. It's not as good as Google search.
Oh,
it doesn't give actual info. It doesn't lead you anywhere. So I really think it's just weird, fun, like, here's a computer talking to me feeling. But otherwise, I don't get it. I think I'm missing something because I don't get the allure.
Well, it certainly is fascinating that if you were to go to the Google search engine and or Bing or any of them and type in a search question and then want to get more information, and you type in a second question, the search engine doesn't know you typed in the first question. It has, there's no relationship between the first question and the second question. It's just another question and then another question. It's not keeping track of your questions. Whereas
Google search engine is definitely keeping track of your questions.
What?
Just so you know. Yeah.
What?
Go erase your search history, Dad, if you didn't know that.
Well, I know it's got my search history up there, but it's not answering the question. In other words, I can't say, when did Dr. Salk work at Westbridge, get an answer, and then say, but wasn't he there in 1980?
Oh, I see what you're saying. You can't continue on. In a conversational, adding on to the previous information.
Right,
that makes sense. Yeah,
Each time the search engine just thinks it's a new search.
Yeah.
Whereas with Bard and ChatGPT, you are actually carrying on. You can have short phrases that tell it more, get me more information
so
based
tell,
on this.
So tell everybody what you did with Bard, because it was really funny.
So what I did with Bard was I asked it, I was actually looking for a picture. A number of pictures were taken back in the 1980s of at this company called Westbridge that was funded by me and chaired by Dr. Jonas Salk. And I wanted a picture of Dr. Salk and I.
Which was what kind of company?
It was a biotechnology research company.
Okay.
And is actually has the record, I think I mentioned on here before, has a record for being my longest held investment. I held that investment for 40 plus years and finally was forced to sell it when they sold the whole company off. So
it turned out to be a decent investment.
It was a good investment. It was really good. So I was just looking for an old picture, right? And I couldn't find anything on a regular search engine. So I thought I'd try Bard and ChatGPT. And Bard responded when I said, I typed in, find a picture of Dr. Jonas Salk and Phil Town at Westbridge in the 1980s. And it came back and said, Dr. Salk was never at Westbridge.
Hmm.
I went, okay. So then I typed the next question, which was, yes, he was. He was chairman of the board of Westbridge in the 1980s. And then it came back and it said, oh, I really apologize. You're right.
See, that's so crazy.
Isn't
it came
that
back. And what did it do in that section?
In that
that's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Where is it? Is it learning from you and your questions? I think that's what's happening from my read of how this thing works. Or did it go to some other, did it do a deeper search? Anyway, go ahead.
Well, I'll give you this information, you guys. You can play with this and see how it all comes up with different answers. So it came back and said, I apologize. I made a mistake. Yes, I have found that Dr. Salk indeed worked at Westbridge from 1980 to 1995, chairman of the board, and this company was founded and funded in part by Phil Town as a as a small cap investment fund by Phil Town and his wife Jenny,
who does not exist. Just to be clear,
there's no Jenny. There's no wife Jenny. It was.
I think that's founded, the funniest part. Where did it pull Jenny from?
Yeah, it was. Was it
like
was
it didn't have to
Dr.
mention
Salt.
A wife? Who cares?
Right.
But no, it invented a wife.
It invented a wife. It didn't have to mention a wife. Exactly. But it invented a wife. It invented, obviously I'm an investor and it must have realized, oh, he's an investor. Let's just put this together.
Yeah.
So small
but
cap
But it presented
fund.
That as a statement, right? A statement of fact.
Mm-hmm. A statement of fact. Right.
See,
and it went on to explain what Westbridge did, and it, invested in many different things, which it didn't. It was focused on developing organic biotechnology for agriculture. And that was not in the piece that Bard came back with at all. It was an investment fund that invested in a lot of very, very useful things. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just completely wrong. It was some third world direction giver telling me how to get someplace they had no idea about. And that and that's where I started to feel like this is compelled to give an answer. It wants to serve so badly that it's going to come up with an answer. And it just kind of puts together the best one it can get.
And again, I think that's what it's supposed to do, because what it says here, they have an FAQ on the Google site. If you just put in Bard, you can find it. It says that it's a language model that learns by, quote unquote, reading trillions of words that help it pick up on patterns that make up human language. So it's good at predicting what might be reasonable responses.
What might
Nowhere in there is responses. Anything about fact or information or knowledge or sources. They actually have another one about sources, but it's just entirely about the language prediction model.
Yeah. And we have found on doing research on companies that it will come back with these really interesting answers, some of which are pretty close in terms of like, how would you value this business? It kind of comes back sometimes fairly close to what we think. But then it throws these loops in there of just totally made up information that looks absolutely real.
Yeah. So, they have a point here about citing sources, and it says if Bard directly quotes from a web page, it cites that page. Mm-hmm. For answers with images, Bard enables you to see and click on that image. Sometimes the same content may be found on multiple web pages, and Bard attempts to point to a popular source. And then it says, Bard was built to be a creative and helpful collaborator. It works well in creative tasks, like brainstorming ideas for a birthday party.
There we go.
We see it as a complementary experience to Google search. Bard is an experiment and will use its launch as an opportunity, blah, blah, blah. So I think that leads to what is really interesting to us is, why does any of this matter? One, can I use it in investing research? Which, when I looked at ChatGPT, and maybe with this one, I haven't tried it, it did give SEC data that I found to be useful. It was easy to grab. It was nice. It was fine. It wasn't anything different than I could get a different way, but it was fine. It wasn't made up. So, okay, it gives you that sort of basic stuff. But then, you know, what's the next iteration of this?
Well, just make a note that ChatGPT gives you all that basic great SEC stuff, you know, but not since September of 2021.
Yes, excellent. So it's like, excellent. Okay, whatever that asterisk means. On right? What I just said. Yes, that's right.
And whereas Bard theoretically is up to date. I haven't tried it for investing stuff just because
I don't trust
this is
the why
numbers.
People are interested in this, right? It's got to be going to a much more useful place, right? Or else there's no point to any of this.
Well, this desire to come up with an answer regardless certainly is effective when you're looking for, you know, ideas for a party. That's a great thing.
That's a great thing. Handy.
But it's not so great if you're looking for facts. And,
yes.
And since Google, for me, as a professional, is largely about getting facts.
Yes.
As opposed to ideas for a party, then Bard and ChatGPT haven't been very useful. So I'm looking for where this is going to go, though. I mean, at some point, maybe they figure out how to get rid of this problem where it's hallucinating. I don't know how you get rid of that if they have something that's free to put ideas together.
I don't know either,
word,
but that's why I think
salad,
that,
you know?
I think that Bloomberg is working on it. I know that article I read off was really boring, but but I mean, to me, and I'm sure everybody at Bloomberg is very excited about having some kind of natural language search that you could use instead of their horrific Bloomberg keyboard. I mean, that would be the next level of their service.
Right.
And I'm sure that's what they're going for. So that's my next question. Okay, one, how do I use it as a rando on my couch? Okay, not that useful for me, rando on my couch. Two, how are
What on your couch?
A random person, rando.
You said a rando.
I said a rando, yeah.
Rando. Okay.
I love
onward.
It's so funny that that cracks you up.
All right, rando. So go ahead on your couch. I'm using it for a rando on your couch.
Old lady millennial jokes and slang, and you never even, it's from like 20 years ago. Okay.
Right.
God, we're so old. Now I forgot what I was saying. Oh, yeah. Speak for yourself. So what interesting. What interesting applications are people who actually know about computers and AI using this for within companies that I could then invest in? And that is probably a lot more real right now and a lot more interesting to me.
Well,
so
I can tell you what our company is doing, actually.
Well, I can't invest in your company, so that's...
No, you can't.
Not that helpful.
But I can give. But it'll give you an idea. Of course, it'll be very helpful, because if we're thinking of ideas like this, I'm sure lots of other companies are, and
everybody
I don't
is.
Know that
That's
we'll be
thing.
Hearing about it right away, because people are waiting to pull products out that really do things right. So one of the things we're looking to do is we're building an app called Rocket Trade, and mm-hmm. it's not going to be available for a while, but it's meant for sort of Robinhood users, you know, Robinhood traders. And what we want them to be able to do is to talk to this app. I don't know if that'll ever get there, but in terms of AI, talk to the app and tell and have the app have a conversation with you about what you're interested in and what you're passionate about, what you love to do, where you make your money, where you spend your money. And then using artificial intelligence, go in and find the companies that are using language that would be in the ballpark of the language you just used to describe all the things you're interested in, and then feed those through a screen and come up with the ones that best match you as a person, and which are substantially wonderful businesses, and which may have ways you can use options immediately to start creating cash flow. Mm-hmm. All of that just through having a conversation with the app.
Yeah.
So there's
an
example.
That's where it's going, for sure.
That's where it's going.
But we're not there yet.
No. Nope.
So, and that's also consumer facing, which is going to take a lot longer. I mean, that sounds awesome, by the way.
Thanks.
It's consumer facing. It's going to take a lot longer. What companies are using these tools, and probably better tools than what we're seeing, I'm sure, inside, like to develop their own processes, not necessarily consumer facing, you know what I'm saying? Like updating their companies for the next 20 years, not using systems from 20 years ago.
Well, apparently one of the major uses of this right now that I have watched on YouTube is using the AI's ability to code.
Yeah.
Which apparently is really, I mean, it's extremely fast. It's almost instantaneous. And I've watched somebody decide, you know, trying to show that in less than 20 minutes, you could create a back test that would generate from $10,000, it would generate over $1 million in 1 year of trading, starting with a concept, right? You start with a concept, a trading concept of buy low, sell high, or some silly thing, right? And then this programmer talked to ChatGPT and said, give me code that would do this. And it dumped down a pile of code. He ran the code. It didn't do exactly what he wanted. So he changed the code a bit and tweaked it mm-hmm. and got a result. Got like $600,000 out of a year at $10,000 of trading. And then he started asking it to do other things in coding. And over a period of 20 minutes, he had the back test generate $17 million out of $10,000, and had done this with ChatGPT writing the code almost completely, except for him tweaking it here and there.
Yeah, there's some way that you can use it to write Python language, which is really confusing to learn and stuff. I mean, you can learn it, but it's a pain. So if it can start having those sorts of applications, that would be amazing for me, the rando on the couch. And You just jogged my memory that Nuno mentioned to me that there is, I don't know if it's an app or a website or what, but there is some sort of access that typical normal people have to this app or this website that helps you essentially invent your own AI code, helps you write your own AI code. That's all I know. He said it to me in the kitchen really fast.
We have
Let's
to get
definitely
him
ask him about it because that's interesting because I have talked some before I got sick when I was still going to Value X and going to Berkshire and stuff. I was hearing nothing from investor friends, but I have saved myself, you know, 2 weeks of my life by writing this code that now pulls all the companies I want. And I don't have to go search for it manually. Or now I like look through the 13 Fs using this code every quarter instead of, you know, doing my manual research for 3 days. And I mean, it just, there's a lot of applications if we can only get access to those things in a way that's not a black box. It's very important, I think, I'm curious what you think, to know exactly how what it's searching for or what it's returning is created so that you can know if it's reliable or not. And so that you can also go tweak it like that guy did that you were just saying, if it's not returning the kinds of things you want.
If it's a black box and you use it, let's say, and you get back these results, those results are not less because it's a black box. The results are still
still
worthy of looking through.
Yeah.
But what you don't know is what fabulous thing got missed.
Yeah.
It didn't show up in those
or
results because of the way it was written.
If you tweak the input slightly or you tweak the parameter slightly, maybe then you get a totally different set of responses.
Here's where using AI would be really helpful is that a lot of times we're looking at companies that are having a rough 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, right.
But they're a great company.
Yes.
We think. And the problem is because they're having a rough 2 or 3 years, they don't show up in screens.
Correct.
Because the screens all are looking at the most recent data.
Or they're looking at averages and the recent years pull down the average and therefore out of the return parameter.
I mean, I haven't ever seen screens where you can go back and, you know, show me companies that are really, you know, doing fabulously up until 3 years ago. You know,
that's a pretty funny screen, actually.
It's a weird screen. So I think AI is going to give you the ability to drill down.
I kind of want to invent that now.
Yeah, I know.
Now two years ago. Now 1 year ago.
Yeah, now 1 year
which
ago.
Ones really sucked last month? Give me those.
Well, I'll tell you, you know what? This makes me think it's going to be a while before most of us get past the need to stick to what we already know.
The problem is how
really
much time does
me.
It take to learn these other ways versus doing the research, right?
Yeah, and it doesn't really help me. We've seen this over and over again here at our shop where we'll run screens. Let's say the 13F screens, right? And now you're piling up a bunch of companies from people you respect. And let's say Michael Burry, there's one there for Michael Burry, and we love Michael Burry's investment strategies. And so here it is. He's got this sporting goods company. And you look at it and it's just not pretty at all. It's just got a pile of debt. And it lost money lots of different times. And, you know, it's basically going up because somebody thinks it might get bought out. It's just not easy. Michael Burry consistently comes up with not easy things that somehow he thinks
are
going to go up.
You don't understand why he bought them.
Right.
Okay.
Why is this guy who really thinks about the world a lot like I do in terms of fundamentals looking at this company? It just seems like a train wreck. And so the point being that I'm not an expert in that world, and Burry has made himself an expert in that world. And the difference between Michael Burry and me is that he's a guy who could run a hedge fund while he's going to medical school at Stanford.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't do that. I'm not that smart. And so I have to have the ability to limit the world of questions I'm going to ask to things I know about. And nothing's preventing me from learning more about other things, but, and certainly I should and have over through my career. But if I'm outside my comfort zone, outside my sort of circle of competence, as Buffett says, and I don't know it, that's where I get into real trouble. And so if an AI thing is throwing stuff at me that is outside my circle of competence, but I think this AI knows what it's talking about, and I start relying on that as a way to make a good judgment about a company, I could see disaster coming down the road.
Agree. Yes.
Because that's where the disasters occur, you guys. That's where my train wrecks have happened over my career, is where I thought I knew something I didn't know. I thought I knew something that I didn't know. And that's just really tricky. It's the things you don't know that'll get you, right? And actually, who said that? Will Rogers back in the 30s said, it's not what you don't know that'll hurt you. It's what you think you know that just ain't so. And that's true. That is so true.
Yeah.
So I'm fascinated. I really want to talk to Nunes about what this is going to bring and how he's using it. And you know, let's do that next.
Good.
That,
and then really let's not talk about that. AI anymore, because I'm over it.
Over it. Okay.
I want good old fashioned investing again.
Fair enough. Good old fashioned investing. Okay. All right. Until
I'm trying, guys. I'm trying. Hopefully next week.
Trying to control. All right. Look forward to seeing you guys next time.
Oh, and I also pulled out the Intelligent Investor. I didn't forget that we talked about that. And we also have that in the back of our heads. So we are remembering things from previous podcasts.
There it is right there. I'm ready to grab it. Yours looked like twice as thick as mine. How come you have a big
giant? It really is intimidating.
What is it? Like everybody wrote something on it besides...
It's the revised edition, preface and appendix by Warren E. Buffett.
Sideways like that. Come on. Look at that. Yours is
You probably have the original without the preface and appendix by Warren E. Buffett.
Mine is signed by Ben Graham.
Are you serious?
I'm kidding. It's not that original. Let's see. This is written in 1949. Mine is a foreword in 2005 by John Bogle. I should get the one that Warren wrote.
I mean, who knows? Maybe there's a new version after this one. I'm sure they come out with a new version regularly because people like to buy it and other people like to write forewords.
So there'll be a new one.
So get it, guys. We're going to work on it eventually. And yes, it's intimidating and dense. The end.
I know.
I have nothing else to say.
I know. It's so, so true. And yet it still is in the top books ever written about investing. So let's get it and go to it. All right. Nuno and then Intelligent Investor.
Fingers crossed.
Time to go play.
Thanks, see everybody. Y'all. Bye.
Hi guys, thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding, they really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice because I am not your financial advisor. Nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.